I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, a journey, both physical and spiritual. Sam Lowe joins us to talk about his book, Hawaiki Rising, Hokulea, Nainoa Thompson, and the Hawaiian Renaissance. Did I get that right?
You did. Thank you.
Yay.
Perfect.
All right. So the name of the book, Hawaiki, that name has multiple meanings, right? So tell us.
Yeah, it does. In fact, I published a book myself, but I worked with a publisher, and they were suggesting that the name was just inappropriate. No one was going to know what Hawaiki Rising meant. It should be sailing the Pacific or something else. But I felt the title was really important because there's what they call kauna. It's hidden meaning. It's multiple meanings in Hawaiian. And for me, there were multiple meanings. Hawaiki Rising refers to, first, when you see a island or a landmass coming up over the horizon as you're approaching it by sea, mariners would put in their log, "We raised Valparaiso yesterday." So it's the rising of an island out of the sea. It also refers to the myth of Maui, who is a famous Hawaiian demigod who actually rose the islands out of the sea with a magic fishhook. And it refers to a dream that a very famous Hawaiian, Eddie Aikau, known throughout the surfing world as one of the best surfers in the world ever, who unfortunately died on one of the voyages. Mm-hmm. It was his dream to see Hawaii rise, or to see Tahiti rise from the sea. It refers to the original homeland of the Hawaiians, which is, of all Polynesians, which is Hawaiki. And to me, probably most importantly, it refers to the rising consciousness of Hawaiians as a result of voyaging in the wake of their ancestors.
Mm. All right, so talk about your personal connection to the Hawaiian Islands.
Well, my father was born in Hawaii, and he was sent away to prep school at the age of 17. He found New England to be not just cold physically in terms of the climate, but in terms of the people that he met at prep school. So he stuck it out for about 3 months, and then he ran away. He shipped out. He was a stevedore, eventually found himself at the museum school, studied art, married my mother, and came to Martha's Vineyard, where they had a summer home. So my connection to the islands was through him, but it wasn't until I was in the Navy, actually. I was 21 years old that I first went out to Hawaii and began to have a real sense of what the islands were like and began to meet my Hawaiian brothers and sisters.
Right. So a group of men and women set out to retrace the steps of their ancestors, sailing thousands of miles without using using the same tools of the ancestors, basically looking at the stars and the waves. And so no compass, nothing.
Right.
Yeah. So how did you come upon this story?
Wow. Well, that goes back a long time, actually, to before I ever got to Hawaii. I was a student at Yale, and I was doing a term paper. I went into the stacks. I found this book, Canoes of Oceania. And in this book, there were drawings made by early explorers of these vessels that the Polynesians had used to settle the Pacific. And in my mind was Kon-Tiki, Thor Heyerdahl's story, which purported that Polynesians drifted into the Pacific from South America on clunky rafts. And what I saw with the spaceships of my ancestors, these were beautifully constructed canoes. And that at that moment, I got very, very interested in the story of how my ancestors might have settled the Pacific from more of an anthropological point of view, because I was studying anthropology. That was the beginning of it.
So we now know, science tells us, that the Polynesian people originated from Southeast Asia, not South America, as some had thought.
That's right.
And you write, Polynesia had been settled by voyagers who sailed from west to east against the winds and currents, eventually colonizing islands scattered across 10 million square miles of ocean. How was this possible? How could a people without metal tools have built vessels capable of sailing against the wind? And how could they have navigated such a vast extent of ocean without charts or instruments?
Right.
That's a good question.
Right, yeah. it was first asked by Captain Cook, actually, when he discovered the islands. So to answer that question, three people got together in around 1972, 73, and they came up with the idea of, well, let's build one of these vessels. Let's put it to hard use. Let's sail it. Let's see if it will carry enough cargo, if it can sail into the wind, if it's sturdy enough. Problem was, not so hard to actually recreate the ancient vessel, which it turns out is a catamaran. Mm-hmm. Twin hulls spanned by a deck. If you ever saw this canoe anchored in Oak Bluffs or out here in Woods Hole, you'd go, wow, that must be a racing vessel. It's so sleek and so beautiful. So the problem wasn't so much building the vessel, but was how would you navigate it? Mm. No chart, no compass, no instruments of any kind. And so they found a navigator who lived in a tiny island in the Caroline Islands, a man named Mao Pialug, who came to Hawaii and who, on the first voyage that this canoe made in 1976, navigated it successfully using an ancient science of immersion in the natural world, becoming attuned to the waves, the winds, the stars. And he made the 2,400-mile voyage between Hawaii and Tahiti successfully using his techniques.
Mm. Yeah, it was amazing. He could tell you which way, I mean, he could just feel that wave and know exactly, you know, which direction, it was, where you're going. I think it was sometimes when he was training Nainoa that he would be down below, not seeing, but he would know when he changed direction.
That's right. Well, Nainoa Thompson was the young man that gravitated to Mao. In 1976, spent as much time with him as he could, who became interested through Mao in learning all he could about navigating. And later on, Mao took him on as a student. And what you're referring to is a story in the book when Nainoa has been training with Mao for a couple of years, and Mao had gained some confidence in him. So instead of staying awake, he went down into the halls to go to sleep. And he told Nainoa what course to steer. Mm-hmm. And Nainoa, being a dutiful student, steered that course for a while, but also wanting to set off on his own, tried different courses to see if he could train himself and how the canoe was moving. And he was steering by the stars, aim at different stars. And he thought Mao wouldn't notice. He was sound asleep in the hull. But when Mao came out, he said, "What course you steer last night?" And Nainoa was amazed that he could actually determine and tell Nainoa what courses he had steered.
Yeah.
Just from the feel of the canoe in the hull.
All right, let's go back in time here. Tell us a bit about how Hawaiians felt about the land before these newcomers came.
Well, the newcomers you're referring to are, of course, us.
Us, right.
Us Haole folk.
Haole, that's what they call us.
White
Haole
folk, New Englanders, basically. And there was a rich and a deep connection to what they call the aina among all Hawaiians. They lived in these islands for 1,000 years. The land had passed down from one chief to another chief to another chief. They tilled the lands. There were oral histories that were part of the lands. Their ancestry that went back generations and generation was part of the land. The land was owned by the gods. The land was not owned by people. It was just taken care of by people. They were the temporary caretakers, which was a totally different kind of sense of belonging to the land, of being kama'aina, of being part of the land than the New Englanders had when they came.
Yeah. And so then the New Englanders come, the Haole come, and they change things. They get laws changed and... They bring, I'm going to write you right here, Haole newcomers brought with them not only new ideas, laws, and religions, but also new diseases.
Yeah, that's right. And it was really a 1-2 punch. It's very common. We have that sense of it from our knowledge of Native American history, what happened to the Plains mm-hmm. Indians. The first missionaries that came in brought Christianity and taught the Hawaiians that their old religions were useless, and Hawaiians could see that these new people were extremely powerful. They had big sailing ships, they had clothing, they had plank houses. They just appeared to be so much more well off, in a sense. And so the old religion started to be undermined, but I think the real punch came in when smallpox, mm-hmm. venereal disease, other diseases were imported into the islands. And Hawaiians started to die off in massive numbers. Again, it's the same story that happened to our American Indians.
You're right. In 1873, when Mark Twain visited the islands, a little less than 100 years after Cook, he found the Hawaiian population dispirited and dying. The natives of the islands number only about 50,000, and the whites about 3,000, chiefly Americans. According to Captain Cook, the natives numbered 400,000 less than 100 years ago. That's pretty dramatic.
Yeah, it is. And in fact, Cook was quite amazing. That's a fairly accurate number, a census that he took just from observing the villages and the islanders. But subsequent research has raised that number to maybe 800,000 to a million.
Wow.
So within a couple of hundred years, the number had dwindled to 100,000, and today it's 27,000.
Mm. All right, so you mentioned these three men, Ben, Finney, Herb, Connie and Tommy Holmes. They get together and they say, all right, let's build this canoe and see if it sails, and we'll sail it to Tahiti. We'll recreate what our ancestors did. So how did this isn't inexpensive. This was a pretty expensive canoe to build. So how did they raise the money for this?
Well, it was really odd. It was a bicentennial project for the American bicentennial for the conquerors, really, the Haole folk. And they came in and slid in with this grant proposal that we'll build this traditional canoe and celebrate our ancestors, not necessarily your ancestors. And I think they got a grant of maybe $100,000 to build the canoe. So that's how it came about.
Mm, yeah. And Herb kind of, he was interested. He started, he was like you, looked in these old books and was really fascinated.
He was an artist.
Yeah.
And he was living in Chicago at the time. And he started to see the same things I saw, and he started to draw, paint, beautiful paintings of these ancient canoes. And he felt the spirit start to move. He was actually working on an advertising campaign for the Jolly Green Giant at the time. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I think I have to go home. And he went back to Hawaii to live. He was born in Hawaii, but he went home and came up with this idea. Look, let's build one of these canoes. Let's take it to sea. Let's see how it handles. And there were two others, an anthropologist, Ben Finney, who had studied in Tahiti, who had also the same idea, who had actually experimented building a smaller version of the canoe, and Tommy Holmes, who was a famous island surfer and waterman. They formed a troika, and they came up with the idea of forming a society, Polynesian Voyaging Society, and the rest is history. They built and launched the canoe in 1975.
Right. So this project became an opportunity, though, to revive Hawaiian culture. So talk a little bit about that aspect of it.
Well, there were multiple. Well, let's just say there were two motives, really. Ben Finney, who was an anthropologist, wanted to disprove Heyerdahl. He wanted to actually conduct an experiment with this canoe. It was pretty much a scientific kind of thing with him. Well, but Herb Connie, who was part Hawaiian, felt this more spiritual element in him. And he was convinced that the canoe was really the kind of cathedral of Hawaiian culture, the central artifact of that culture. And if they rebuilt the canoe and if they started to voyage, there would be all of the other cultural attributes associated with the canoe would come back. The language would be stimulated, the dance, the hula, the chants, the oral traditions would come back, food preparation, all of the things that were associated with voyaging, which was central to Polynesian culture, would be revived. And so he had this idea that it might stimulate a revival of interest in all aspects of Hawaiian culture. Yeah. And that's what happened.
Right. We're talking with Sam Lowe. His book is Hawaiki Rising. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you'd like to join our conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break.